Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. The AFLW was established in 2016, expanding from an initial 8 teams to 18 in 2022. In the years since it launched, the league has grown to showcase the different styles of football that each corner of Australia has to offer. In Sal Bahari and Danielle McLean's essential documentary, Like My Brother, we follow four AFLW hopefuls from the Tiwi Islands, Rena, Frida, Juliana and Jess, as they follow their dreams to become league players. But as we see throughout the film, dreams aren't always meant to happen overnight, with the film following their journey away from their home in Tiwi to Victoria, where they have to train and try out for consideration with the major teams. On this journey, we see the difficulties that the AFLW hopefuls face, especially those from communities like the Tiwi Islands, where the same kind of opportunities that come easily for male players are simply not afforded to the women players. In the following interview with Sal and Danielle, the co-directors talk about their journey of bringing this story to life, what kind of changes they want to see in the AFLW, and the importance of hearing stories that rarely have been told on screen. Like My Brother launches in Australian cinemas nationwide from today, the 17th of October 2024. It is a must-see Aussie documentary that you can take your whole family to see. If you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you can and want to support us, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to keep our lights on from as little as $1 a month. To get you hyped for the film, here is a snippet of the trailer, followed by the interview with Sal Bahari and Danielle McLean.
And that's the message they took to Australia. We're Tiwi men. That's our mob. That's who we're proud of. And everybody knows who the Tiwi are.
Girls have definitely been living in the shadows of guys for years and years and years.
People in the AFL world are looking and they're like, wow, what a talent she is.
We like to see them play down Melbourne, see them on the big TV.
I actually looked at all the girls' results and looked at last year's draft for the AFL women's and compared where you girls sat in the top 10. You would have been quicker than any other girl that was in the draft. So imagine if you had a fancy indoor stadium and you were wearing shoes.
The first Tiwi woman that plays at that AFLW level, she will be endeared forever.
We do have a gym, but the dingoes have eaten the cushion off the bench press.
Knowing you're leaving home, but you're leaving for one of the best situations, you know.
Some will flourish, some might find it a little bit harder.
My dad called and he was crying, said that my grandfather passed away.
Footy will make them strong.
Sometimes I have to remind myself to be a strong Tiwi woman.
Move on with your life today. Continue to play footy. You can go on anywhere.
Thanks, Danielle. Thanks, Sal, for giving me your time to talk about your beautiful documentary. I really appreciate the time, but I also appreciate the film as well. It's such a real treat to be able to spend time with these girls and seeing them play and all this kind of stuff. I guess I want to start talking about, Sal, I know you had done a bunch of shooting beforehand before Danielle had joined in, but I'm curious if you can talk about where the journey for this particular story came from. What was your interest in wanting to tell this story on screen?
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for the lovely compliments about the film. It's really, really makes it feel very real. I was sitting in the stands of Icon Oval, Carlton in 2017, February the 3rd, the very first AFLW game, and just saw something so fresh and exciting and new, but also something devoid of some of the greatest playing potential on the planet in that it was very, very, very white. And I conceived of the idea then, you know, came up with the title sitting there then. and went home, and my partner had spent some time in the Tiwi. He's a photographer, and he'd spent some time there recent to that time. And he'd sort of mentioned something about the girls on the sidelines, and I knew about the Tiwi footy players because my dad's a mad keen I grew up in a mad footy household. So I knew about, you know, pretty much through Michael Long, really, the Long sort of legacy, and also what Michael Long had done for racial vilification. So it just all started to make sense. And I jumped on a plane and went to the Tiwi and was filming 15 minutes later. And I mean, you know, it makes it sound like it all sort of happened over a weekend. Of course, there's pitching and all of that stuff in the, and, you know, the team and all of that. Yeah. And then sort of saw this incredible young talent and just really started showing up. And I had a relationship with Danielle. We'd met in 2017, and I mentioned the story to her, but she was working on Burrumbi Kids, Dan, at that time?
Yeah, I think so, yep.
And just didn't have the bandwidth. And also, you know, as you start to make a documentary, you don't really know where it's going. You know, it's not like a principal day of photography and off you go and you're fully funded and it's going to be neat and you're going to, you know, you're really rolling with it. And so until I could really say to Danielle, Dan, here's why I need your help. I need you to help me with X, Y, and Z, and here, have a look at this, because this is incredible. And once I was able to do that, Dan saw the story as well.
You know, the girls have that, they're so open and stuff too, and I think you see that in the footage, even you see in the rushes and stuff, you just saw these girls want the cameras to be there, they want to share their stories. And so then I felt like, I live in Darwin, why was I sitting out? It's like, it made sense, you know, I'm 15 minutes from the place. They obviously want us there. There was Tiwi producers on board. I thought, this is a great story. So that's why I sort of come on board.
I was going to say, Dan, you have so many projects on the go at once. Like, you have so many irons in the fire going. So I'm curious for you, obviously it being a story that resonates with you, but what makes you decide that, yes, this is a project that I'm going to jump on board with?
I think for all of us, we're all the same. We have lots and lots of projects on the go, and sometimes things get hot and you get some money or you get some, you know, a way into a story, and Sal invited me in at that point. You know, she had some really beautiful, amazing rushes with the girls, you know, playing footy really young and stuff. But, yeah, I could just see the potential in the story, and I had got to know Sal a bit, and, you know, the Tiwi producers were on. So I just felt like it was – and you – just knew that the community were behind it as well, like, and that's obviously really important for me. I just, you know, so I jumped on because I just thought, you know, why wouldn't I be a part of it? These girls are amazing. So
I mean, that's the thing, like, I'm a Freo Docker supporter myself, so I you know, bled purple for 30 years, and it's been wonderful to see, you know, finally we're getting an AFLW league. Like, it's the kind of thing that has, you know, the whole entire of Australia has been crying out for years and years and years, and finally it exists. And in the same strain, watching your film, it's like, finally we're getting to see these stories on screen, and the importance of getting to hear the stories of these different girls who just so eagerly want to play AFL. And I'm curious if you can talk about the importance of spotlighting that. Sal, if you can start off talking about that, you know, the void, I guess, has been with this kind of story on screen.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I sort of look for micro ways to tell a macro story. So we talk about a Trojan horse. So really what we're sort of exploring here is who has the right to dream, who's around me, who can help me. Once that dream tips into goals, what are the pathways? What are the steps? Now, we're looking at that through a lens of sport, but really that could be anything. You know, that could be, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a teacher, I want to be, you know, whatever I want to be. I think that that's where this story is kind of really resonating. But I think the sort of ability to, in Australia, when it comes to sport, we naturally think cream rises to the top. You know, that if you have a kid with unbelievable talent, that kid will, and you just have to look at the AFL, the men's draft. If you look at the AFL and the men's draft, and you see the schools that those boys are coming out of, in regards to sort of private school systems. Like, you know, they're kids who have had people who pick, not just pick them up and take them to sport, but know what their nutrition is, or probably got a nutritionalist, know if they get an agent, you know, all of this sort of stuff. It's you know, bloody lonely when, like, Frida Porentata Mary, when the talent scouts were going to Tiwi College, you might notice, or you might not have noticed, but if you watch the film again, you will notice in the early stages of the talent scouts being there, she's the only kid that was wearing shoes. Now, that was actually to her detriment because she kicks much better barefoot, but she wanted to wear shoes and she wanted to wear Nike socks. But as for socks, she knew that one of the teachers had Nike socks and she asked, it was Ree. So she asked Ree if she could borrow the socks and Ree said, oh yeah, but they're dirty. And Frida said, don't worry, I'll wash them. And so she washed them and she hung them out and she sat with them while they were dried just so that she could pull those socks and shoes on. And, you know, wow, you know, it's such an amazing sort of metaphor for so much.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the thing is that it is about sharing those stories with Australia. I mean, I come from here. I'm actually from Central Australia, but I live in Darwin, so I know this world really well. And, yeah, like it's actually interesting to actually be reminded how little people know outside of, you know, Aboriginal communities and stuff. There's Aboriginal communities, obviously, in the city and stuff as well, but it's just people don't tend to mix with Aboriginal people. So I think people always find it really astounding. And I think, yeah, the more of these stories, the more actually it humanises everyone and everyone goes, actually, these people are really worth celebrating and, you know, coming along for the ride. These girls are just so open and sharing and amazing talents, but also just amazing human beings. And, you know, we invest in...
Did you enjoy Raina's ball skills?
Well, I was going to say the thing that really struck me is that there's a particular line where we're talking about different styles of football and not wearing shoes and things like that. And yeah. One of the girls, it might have been Marina, who says, you know, let's show them the Tiwi way, right? Yeah, the Tiwi way of playing football. And that's the thing is like the Frio way, the Melbourne way, the Tiwi way, there's all different brands of football. And so it was great to see how that... So, yeah, that aspect I really love because it's completely different. It's a completely different style of football.
It is completely different. And it's interesting. There are very few coaches who can coach for Tiwi Magic to thrive because it's a surprising and unexpected way of... Like, Rena the other day was telling me a story about... She was saying this day that she kicked four goals and she was in ruck. And I was like, well, how did you kick four goals? And she's like, because I just looked to the forward line and I'd look around and I think, well, they're not doing what I want them to do. So I'll just keep going and I'll kick the goal. You know, so, and he said that to a coach in Melbourne, they'd be like, oh my God, you know, it's got to get it down to the forwards. Just get it down to the forwards. You know, that's just not Tiwi style. Tiwi is flowing, running footy.
I think this is the thing that really stands out as well for me. There's a shot where the girls are going down to Melbourne and like we've seen them playing in this beautiful landscape, all these different trees, the green of Tiwi and all this lovely environment. Then they go down to Melbourne and there's this shot of them standing outside and they're looking out and it's like this development area and it's all just vacant lots. There's no trees. It's a completely different world. And it just amplifies how much the need for nurturing and support and community and family it makes you a better player and, you know, detaching them and taking them away from their world. It's like, you know, at the end of the film, I was just screaming, can we just get a Northern Territory team already? Jeez. You know, that's how I felt.
Everyone would love hearing that.
But I'm curious if you can both talk about that sense of community, the different worlds there, how important it is to really present that on screen.
Yeah, I think the girls, I mean, they articulate that pretty well. And I think that's the thing, what they have to sacrifice in order to actually get some sort of success. And it's, you know, it's such a huge sacrifice, isn't it, to be away from family, everything you know, when they are so tight, you know, their communities are so connected and family are around all the time. And then suddenly you find yourself in Melbourne in a suburb on the outskirts and, you know, that's probably was the hardest thing for them. No family popping in, the food, obviously it's such a big culture shock when there's we're so busy and stuff too. But yeah, I think they were pretty brave, I think, actually putting themselves out there as long as they did.
Yeah, I think Nana says it really well when she says, oh, you've got to learn to love the place too. And then we cut to Rena opening the blind and she goes, this place looks dead. It's that line in any, from Melbourne to Darwin, wherever we are, people just are like gobsmacked at that line. The thing that's really interesting, Andrew, is that when we're out on country, Dan and I sat down with the girls and we actually said, okay, what would it take for you guys? So exactly as you're saying, wouldn't it be fantastic if we had a Northern Territory team? But until that time, because the problem is they'd clobber everybody. They would clobber. They'd be the greatest team. So I think the AFLW would be slightly scared of that. And so until we have that team, which has obviously got to happen, and the girls are travelling, nobody's actually taken the time to co-design success. So we actually sat down with the girls and said, what would it take for you guys to thrive down in Melbourne? And they were like, oh, we need 10 flights home a year. And we said, well, that's not going to happen because you just look like you're difficult and it's just not going to happen. It's too expensive. But what would happen if you had 2 flights home a year? What would you need to stay? And you know what? It was so, the answers were so simple. First thing, an outdoor fire so that we can sit around a fire at night, because that's what we do, you know. Tiwi parents, as in house parents, who can help us manage our phone, because that helps us manage our families. Like, so they can answer the phone and say, hey, Frida's at training, because if Frida sees a phone call, she has to take it. And so, you know, that pull to home. The other thing was Tiwi food, just really simple, like stew and rice. And the other thing was a house that they could walk to training. So those, you know, 2 flights home a season, parents, phone, you know, it's not rocket science. And if we co-design that kind of experience, you know, we've got happy players. It's just so interesting, I think.
I completely agree. And you were talking before about drafting the male players, like for AFL, and there seems to be so much more accommodation given to male players, even though, you know, we're years on from AFLW being live and going, there still is far less accommodations given to women players than there are male players. And specifically, I'm thinking about, you know, one of the players has to spend a week away from training and the recruitment and stuff, or there's an injury. And those kinds of things would reasonably be accommodated in the male league, but they're simply not in the women's league. I'm curious if you can talk about if there's been any, maybe from the girls or from the interactions from audiences that you've screened it with, about that kind of accommodation, the lack of accommodation given to AFLW players.
One of the big things is around, actually, women do have babies and men have babies too, their parents as well. And I think actually we shouldn't see, you know, babies as a detriment to them not playing again. Actually, we need to support women to keep playing sports, have their children around, but have a sense of family around too. They can't go down south with a baby by themselves and stuff, of course. But, you know, I don't think the dream's over for those girls and for anyone that has a baby. It's like that's part of the dream, having it all.
Yeah, I think Carlton, you know, I'm a Carlton tragic. Carlton, you know, because I'm just into their socials. I love Cripper. I love that team so much. I live in Carlton. But, you know, they are normalising via social media their guys being dads. So, and that's a massive change. You know, that's a massive, massive change from when, like, my dad played footy to, you know, so it's a massive change. So I think change is coming and we're on the cusp of something really interesting. I think obviously money is an issue, you know, money is a big thing. But I think where we need to rethink the situation for women's footy is that we've got a matrix for success with men's footy that goes back to eyeballs watching free-to-air television. You know, we can measure it. We know. We've got to find different ways to measure women's football, because it's never, ever going to achieve numbers on television screens, because who watches television anymore? But particularly for the demographic of young women, they are not television viewers, but they are incredibly active across all socials. So if we had a matrix to say to brands, all right, forget about old-fashioned television ads. That's not what it's about anymore. It's actually about the conversations that are happening around the sport continuously throughout the week. And then we can start to, we've got to find ways to value, we've got to get more money into the sport, basically. That's the thing. And more money means we can support, you know, all of these teams, these women are pretty much doing the same as what men do, but between, you know, it might have changed their training sessions, might have changed, but particularly with our girls, they were training two nights a week from 5 till 9 p.m. after the men. So I can't speak to, we're screening to Hawthorn Footy Club on Monday, so I'll ask them what their training schedules are.
And we did go to the Richmond training while we were down there, and I think they were training during the day, weren't they? So it must have changed.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you say, it is. It's about money and actually being able to equate that to, you know, investment as well, which is sad, but true, there's other things that are really important other than money. But I will say mates are all watching AFLW now. Season's finished and they're now still watching the footy. They're watching the women's
play. I have to go and watch a film called Like My Brother.
They will. I think lots of them have seen it, actually.
Film is heading out into cinemas very soon, but I'm curious what the journey is there. What kind of actions do you hope come out from a film like this?
Well, for me, it's two things. First is that the AFL puts their big girl pants on and actually has the guts to define pathways. Tammy wouldn't say it like that. Tammy would say, I'd really like to think that there was opportunity for an ongoing dialogue and a conversation around potential for pathways, but come on guys, enough. We need pathways. If I'm a young woman in a remote community, how do I become a footy player? I want to see it as I want to be able to download a PDF and be able to tick it off. That's number one. Number two is we really want every single kid in year 9 and 10 in Australia to see this film, because education is change. And you know, I just want, that's pretty much my, that's, you know, so yeah, go see it, kids. I would say it's a kids film, but you know, that would be amazing for me.
Before you go, I just want to say, this is the kind of film I wish I had as a kid. I wish I saw this as a kid. So kids are lucky that they get to watch this as now. Sorry, continue on, Dan.
I know, I was just going to say, we had a second screening at the Deck Chair Cinema because we were part of the DIFF, Darwin International Film Festival. And a few of Indy's friends came, girls that went to school with her, I didn't invite them or anything, but they came with their mums. And so many young women came with their parents? I thought it was really beautiful.
Awesome.
And there was a whole lot of, obviously, we sold out DIFF. And so there was a whole lot of talk around Darwin about it. At my yoga class, two people approached me, and then I was just saying to Sal that a person whose daughter I played basketball with my whole life, who I've known since I was a kid, came up and said how much she learned from the film, and she's a Darwin woman. So it sort of makes you feel like, well, if she's learning that much, you know, just imagine what people down south can learn from this film as well.
And in a joyful way, you know, it just makes you feel... What I've found in the last couple of screenings we've had is people don't want to leave. They want to sort of, they feel like the joy's going to bubble, you know, the bubble's going to burst as soon as they walk out of the room and they see the latest next news cycle. So, you know, I think that there is that moment for sort of joy and hope. We all need that at the moment, don't we? A bit of kick of joy and hope.
Yeah, Sal, I'll say tonight, so my grandfather was one of the members of the Pioneers Football Club in Alice Springs, and Sal's going to the screening tonight in Alice Springs, and we've got quite a lot of young Pioneers girls who are AFLW hopefuls going along to watch the film. So hopefully this will give them a bit of inspiration.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Well, I genuinely appreciate the time for you both. It's been a real treat. The film is a delight. Talking with you both is great. I hope that, you know, it's going to be the inspiration it needs to be. I'm looking forward to hearing the voices and the excitement coming out of screenings and people having seen the film, because it's a winning film. Congratulations to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening to this interview with Sal Bauer-Harry and Danielle McLean for their film Like My Brother, which is in Australian cinemas from today, the 17th of October. Thanks again for listening. Head over to thecurb.com.au for other interviews and reviews. We'll see you on the next one.